In its quest to provide an open forum for discussion of controversial issues, this station allows hosts and their guests to express themselves without any significant censorship. You're advised that any views expressed by the hosts or their guests are not necessarily the views of Tug Entertainment or its partners.
Welcome to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com. And hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com and 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Officer Radio is your source for the latest news, trends, and issues facing the law enforcement community. Join us each week as Officer Borelli and his guest examine, dissect, and discuss the issues facing our industry. Call in live and join the conversation to get your voice heard. Now, let's get to it. It's Officer Radio, live with Frank Borelli on Officer.com.
Good afternoon. Happy New Year. Welcome to the first show of the new year here on Officer Radio. I'm your host, editor for Officer.com, Frank Borelli. We are having a minor technical issue, and I can't type and talk, so let me get this squared away. All right. Today we're going to be talking with Betsy Brantner-Smith, Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith, well-known, internationally known, officer survival trainer. We're going to be talking with Chuck Canterbury, national president of the FOP. God, I really can't talk and type at the same time, folks. I really apologize for this. And Mr. Craig Floyd.
We're going to take a look back at the year 2011. Some of the highs and lows and the challenges that we faced. Lord knows it was a dangerous year for police officers. We'll get the final count from Mr. Craig Floyd. Last I heard was 173 officers died in the line of duty. Horrendous number. Far too many. One's too many. We all know that. But, I mean, that's just ridiculous. And it's been an ugly year already in 2012. You know, for having three officers down already, five more injured in one incident, six officers shot, one of them fatally, succumbed to his wounds. 2012 has been a terrible year as well. We're going to take a look back at 2011. Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith. And you know I'm doing great. First show of the new year. I'm stuttering. I'm confused because I'm trying to read. I'm trying to type. I'm trying to solve technical issues here all at the same time, and it's not working so well. We're going to talk to Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith about a number of topics to include the increase in ambushes on officers in 2011. Issues concerning this Occupy movement and crowd control versus political pressure versus societal acceptance of what law enforcement has to do to try to maintain the peace and safety and well-being. Anything that might have generally been observed in quote-unquote bad guy behavior, changes that mandate changes in how we police officers prioritize officer survival concerns and what we do in our approaches. The ongoing importance of training, obviously, and there's should be a bigger focus on officer survival than there usually is. Quite often, we get stuck with issues. We get training that's based on insurance liability mandates or something else. And what we really need to be doing is focusing on officer survival and how we go home at the end of every shift more often than whether or not, somebody check the right box on a form to make sure the insurance company is happy after we've inspected our vehicle and done 27 equipment checks before we go out on patrol. You know what I'm trying to say? There's so much admin red tape. Maybe our focus needs to be a little bit different. I believe it should be. And then we're going to talk to her about whether or not there's a need for increased first aid training or self-aid training currently out there in our community. We're going to talk to Mr. Chuck Canterbury, National President of the FOP, about the number of officers ambushed in 2011 and that increase, whether or not there's been any political reaction or reaction from elected representatives at the state or federal levels that the FOP has been made aware of, whether or not they have any recommendations, the FOP, that is, has any recommendations for training or policy updates in relation to this increase in directed and targeted violence against officers that we saw in 2011. And it's slapping us in the face here at the beginning, the first week of 2012. whether or not they have any, the national FOP, that is, has any particular outlook or position on the Occupy Wall Street folks, the participators there, any upcoming events they have in 2012. And our last topic I think we'll talk about with President Canterbury is the 40,000 new laws that went into effect across the nation January 1st, whether or not any of them are in particular interest, of particular interest to the national FOP. And then we've got Mr. Craig Floyd on as our last guest of the day, Chairman and CEO from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. We're going to verify our final number of officers lost in 2011, made the ultimate sacrifice. How many of them were lost to ambushes? How many of them were lost to traffic accidents or traffic-related fatalities, traffic-related incidents? How many of them were lost to assault or a homicide with a firearm? This seems to be a political hot topic, given our current presidential administration, whether or not anybody's going to try, anybody in that administration is going to try to leverage an increase in firearms death of police officers for a political agenda is always a topic that gets discussed, not one that I will talk about with Mr. Floyd, but one that's out there. The obviously unacceptable increase over the losses in 2010. Any loss is unacceptable. We already know that, and we've seen three this year. Like I said, at least three this year, with five more officers wounded, and we're only in the fifth day of the year. And then finally, we'll get Mr. Floyd to update us on Police Week 2012, the Memorial Museum, and any fundraising efforts that the Law Enforcement Memorial has going on. Bear with me, we're still trying to resolve a few technical issues, so if you hear me pause or say a lot or stutter, that's just because I can't type, talk, and read all at the same time. I'm not that coordinated. Throughout today's show, just like all of our shows, we'll be taking calls from you listeners. If you're interested in calling in, the number to dial is 866-404-6519. That's 866-404-6519. If you have a comment, question, observation, or other thought to share, don't hesitate to dial me up. If for any reason you're uncomfortable calling, feel free to send me an email. Email address is frankborelli@officer.com. That's frankborelli@officer.com. And I will check it several times through the show and do my best to reply to any emails on the air. If not, I will email a reply back after the fact. Today's show, like all of them, will be archived on the officer.com radio page as well as our podcast page. I'm not going to tell you how to find them. If you're listening to the show, you're on the officer.com radio page. Look at your computer, and there it is. The podcast page, if you look up at the navigation, is right next to the radio page. It's a link on the navigation bar. Not a problem for you to find it. If you want to bookmark the podcast page, you can download those podcasts by right-clicking on a link. Some of them might actually serve as good reference material for you. I know I've already referenced them in some training that we've done for various agencies. The archive shows are also available on iTunes, so you can search us out there to download them. As you hopefully well know, Officer.com has a Facebook fan page and a Twitter feed. Any updates we plan for this radio show, schedule guests, etc., will be posted and tweeted accordingly. And I still think it sounds weird to say tweeted. You've been doing it for how long now? Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. We will return the favor. Not only do we appreciate the interaction, but it allows us to serve your information needs better. It allows us to feel like we're serving the community, the law enforcement community, even better, which ultimately is our goal. So looking back at 2011, like I said at last count, 173 officers lost in the line of duty, 20 more than we lost in 2010. Any one is too much. Certainly 173, almost one every other day, is horrendous. Our condolences, our prayers, our best wishes for the families, the surviving members of those officers that fell. Our prayers and condolences and support go out to them. We hate to see any officer lost. It's even more painful to see the survivors, especially sometimes when they're young children. We had that incident, that case happened, and I'm sure you might have heard the advertisements mentioned. We saw a six-year-old boy who had been born after his father had been killed in the line of duty, and just completely difficult, unacceptable. It looks like we might have some of our issues fixed on the technological front, thanks to the good folks at TogiNet and me hopefully being able to make sure my internet connection's better. Don't know what happened, why it blinked. So if we get that update, we'll be good to go. Anyway, it is painful. It's horrendous. It's hurtful. It's unconscionable that we see children who are growing up without parents because they died. Their parents made the ultimate sacrifice, died in line of duty. Some of these children never even met their parents. That causes an emotional turmoil that's difficult to deal with at best, and we need to not, I mean, certainly we want to save our own lives, but as a parent, you know, I had my son long ago tell me he didn't want to attend my funeral. I had to promise him I would live to be 120 years old. That way I was living past his current expected life, and I would die after him so he didn't have to go to my funeral. Is it realistic? Absolutely, positively not. But it was the promise I made to him to make him feel better at the grand old whopping age of 5 years old. I can't imagine, as a parent of four children, what it is like for those children to lose a parent. As much as we don't want to see an officer fall, the families almost suffer more. And it's hard to comprehend. It's hard to wrap our minds around. We need to do all we can to support those families. Certainly, Concerns of Police Survivors does that in a big way, and we're going to try to get somebody from that organization on the show in the near future. The National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, I know, goes out of its way to honor the fallen and make sure the families realize how much their loved one's sacrifice is appreciated. There are other organizations. Maybe we can get them on the air, too. We're coming up on our first break. We'll hopefully get these technological glitches fixed while we're on the break. When we come back, we should have Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith with us, and we'll talk to you then.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. In May of 2011, a small brown-eyed boy proudly showed off the law enforcement buttons he had pinned to his shirt in honor of his dad, an officer killed in the line of duty 6 years ago. Then the reality set in. This boy was just a few days away from his sixth birthday. He never got the chance to meet his dad, nor did thousands of children whose parents' names are forever etched into the living memorial in Judiciary Square. Join us in 2012 as we launch Officer World Expo in Washington, D.C. in our effort to reduce the intolerably large number of officers who didn't get to go home to their families. OfficerWorldExpo.com, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Ali Lopreet. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Lopreet, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I think we've got our technology issues resolved. At least I hope so, because they seem to be on my end and I hate being responsible. I got an email from Sarah Cole. Thank you very much. Apparently, I've talked about tweeting several times, and she says it's perfectly acceptable for me to say the word posts instead of tweets. So I may do that in the future just because I feel so silly with saying tweeting, and maybe it's just me. Joining us on the show now is Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith. Good afternoon, Sarge. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good, Frank. And as you know, I love to tweet. And Sarah knows that too.
And I'm a sexist pig. I know that. Maybe it's just because of my age. Maybe it's because of how I perceive myself. But the whole idea of me in all of my SWAT gear holding an AR tweeting just doesn't mix in my head. I can't get past it. But I'm glad that you like it. And, you know, the feminine woman that you are, that's perfectly acceptable in my mind because, like I said, I'm a sexist pig. Anyway, thanks for joining us on the show. We are here today to talk about 2011. As well as looking forward to 2012, hopefully some good stuff. Doesn't look like it so far, I hate to say. But looking back at 2011, you know, we had a weekend in January of 2011. In 24-hour time frame, we lost 11 officers, and I think four of them were at the Lakewood ambush. What have you seen? What do you think? The increase in ambushes on officers in 2011. You travel around the country doing officer survival training. What are you getting feedback about, concerns about, and so on?
Well, we're seeing much more people have more of a propensity to shoot at us. That's what we're seeing. We know firearms deaths are up. And when we talk about officer ambushes, you know, we had several this year where people just walked right up to an officer or pulled right next to him at a stoplight and shot him. We just lost an officer a week or two ago where I went to a domestic dispute, and the guy actually went down in the basement, took up a tactical position with a rifle, and ambushed this officer from a basement window. The officer was doing everything technically correct, but, you know, we've got a lot of post-military people that are coming back. Not everybody that was in the military is going to come back and be a good member of society, so we've got people with military training. And frankly, life isn't valued like it was. So people are more likely to shoot at the police, even knowing that we're going to shoot back at them and probably kill them.
Well, let me ask you something, and don't take this the wrong way. I certainly take no offense. I come from a big military family. I'm a service veteran. I got four brothers that are veterans. My oldest two kids are, well, yeah, they're both veterans. Both of my children-in-laws are still serving. Big military family. I certainly agree with you. Not every military vet coming back from overseas or getting out of the service is going to be a good guy. But I can't, in my mind, reconcile that solely with this increase in ambushes. I mean, certainly it's a military tactic, we know that, but gangbangers have been doing it for years. Other bad guys have been doing it for years. Is there, do you think there's some correlation between anger at the government and us being such a uniformed representation of it?
Absolutely. Here's what you have, and this is what I was just talking to my husband about before I got on the phone.
Your husband being the famous or infamous J.D. Yeah. Buck Savage, and we will get him on the show.
J.D. Buck Savage. I never thought I'd be Mrs. Buck Savage, but I am. But we were talking about this. Here's the thing. We walk out there, you know, whether you're wearing a uniform or a raid jacket or whatever, we represent the government. And people are angry at the government right now. And we have, you know, a lot of people say, oh, it's right-wingers, it's left-wingers. You know what? It's both. People on the right, the very, very hardcore constitutionalists, they're angry and mistrustful of the government. On the left, we've got a bunch of very empowered anarchists who, you know, are angry at us and they want to lash out at us. Yeah, that's absolutely the military, you know, the post-military folks that are coming back. Yep, they've got some urban combat skills, things like that. They may, you know, be in street gangs. But no, we're in a society now where nobody trusts the government. People are really angry, and we're standing here in the middle, you know, saying, hey, I'm the government, and I'm here to serve a search warrant. I'm here to make a traffic stop. I'm here to break up your domestic. And that's who people are going to take their anger out on. So it's something, you know, that cops need to be aware of. And I think I wrote an article on officer.com to talk about being an informed crime fighter. We need to know what's going on, not only in our own country, but in the Middle East, in Europe, because it not only pertains to, society, it pertains to our very survival.
It does, and you did, and it was an excellent article. You know, and you touch on an interesting topic, though, because everything that's going on in the world, there seems to be this this protesting movement, this, and I don't want to call it an anarchist movement, and it's actually funny, you talk about the anarchist far out on the left and the right-wing extreme. I consider myself a right-wing extremist, but I've had friends who told me I'm so far out to the right that I'm coming around on the left as if it's a circle, and they may be right, but you look at the world and we see this protest movement going on. That was something else that, you know, it was on our list of topics. And see if we can squeeze this in. We're looking at an awful lot of crowd control in 2011, more that's probably been done since the late 60s with the, you know, the riots back then and the war protests and stuff. And we're seeing – are we seeing a different kind of political pressure or societal acceptance of the police officer who simply does his job? And when we talk about government, a lot of people forget. We're not talking about federal government. I spent my entire career in small municipalities. I answered to a city council or a town council, not even a county council. People see us as this representative of the government, but more often than not, we're a representative of their community leaders. And those are often small communities. Are we seeing a change in general in society towards police officers who are simply doing their duty, even when we're serving the needs of our own communities?
Well, absolutely. And I'm getting on a plane Monday, and I'm going out to Portland, Oregon, to work with some officers there on crowd control training issues. I was on a crowd control team. I ran a crowd control bicycle team. And, mainstream society viewed, you know, the Reclaim the Streets and all the little anarchist groups, you know, as most people viewed them as, you know, kind of little dirtbags. And we mostly saw them in the Northeast. We'd see them, you know, a little at some of the big, you know, like the G8 summits and things like that. Now they become mainstream. Time Magazine made the protester the person of the year. So now all of a sudden, these protesters, and that's a very vague term, are being romanticized and they're being glorified. And who stops the protesters? We do. I was out in Oakland during Occupy Oakland when they were trying to clean that all up. And I'm telling you, those cops were demoralized because they were literally having to fight against their own city government, trying to protect their citizens, trying to protect the city's property, and yet working against the city government who glorified those protesters.
Politicians quite often don't do policemen a lot of good. We know that because they're more worried about getting a vote than they are about keeping the peace or protecting officers' lives.
But, absolutely. And that's the problem that we're going to continue to see. The police represent social order. That's what we do. And we're there to create order. And social order is a negative these days. And so we're a negative. And our protesters are becoming more and more violent. You know, they're obviously, they're tech savvy. Yeah, so are we. But again, you know, you just had an NYPD cop get slashed and stabbed, and then you had the occupiers block the ambulance on, I believe it was on New Year's Eve. You know, everybody wanted to make a big deal about the UC Davis OC spraying incident, but when you watch that whole video, you see a bunch of cops trapped by protesters, you know, 10 times their numbers. It's getting frightening for us, and a lot of police departments are ill-prepared for what we're dealing with.
Now, and again, I don't know how much time we have left, but let me ask you this, because I bet it's going to get a lot uglier before it gets better, and here's why. Everybody talks about economic recovery, but we still don't see staffing at police departments increasing. Training gets slashed is one of the first items. We both know that. They're all down to minimum levels. I don't see that being increased. Something, again, this was on our list to talk about, the simple first aid training, and that benefits the community as well as us, but your simple first responder, advanced first aid level training isn't getting near as much focus as I think it should, but our ability to treat ourselves, when we have to, we're not getting that training either. Is any of this stuff going to improve anytime soon, or should we really prepare when we call ourselves warriors on the street to have to adapt more to a warrior mentality than we already have?
Here's what we need to do. We have to stop, as individual police officers, sitting around whining that the department doesn't send me to self-aid, buddy aid class, the department doesn't give me enough time on the range, the department doesn't do this, they don't do that. We have to do it ourselves as individuals. If your department doesn't get you to a self-aid, buddy aid class, because I know traditionally in our profession, who gets that stuff? The SWAT team does. That has to come down to the street level, and every individual officer needs to know how to get themselves aid and get their buddy aid before the paramedics get there. So what do you need to do? You can go on the internet, you can get on YouTube, Bluetooth, any of the video sites, and you can self-study the aid that you need to be able to keep yourself alive until the paramedics get there. And it may be a long time before they get there. You may be in a situation where they can't get to you. You've got to train individually. You've got to train with two or three of your buddies, and you got to do it on your own. You can't sit and wait for the department to provide you with this training, because this is training we all need.
Sarge, did you really just throw out a competitor's website while you were talking to me on Officer Radio? Yes, you did.
It came out of my mouth automatically.
Shame on
you.
Shame on you. Hey, but you know what? You're right, and I won't take anything away from our competitors. There are a number of excellent law enforcement focused websites in that serve this community. And as a police officer, I would be the first to say, although as the editor of officer.com, I always want you to come to us first. You're doing yourselves harm if you don't use every resource available to seek out training and improve yourself. And I'll say that to everybody. I'm good friends with the editors for the other websites. They do excellent work as well. Use every resource out there on the street. Sarge, we're down under 30 seconds, so I'm going to thank you for joining us today. I do need you to reach out to your husband. I need to get him on the show sometime soon. I know you guys travel crazy busy, but we want to get him on the show, so let him know that. Folks, coming after our next break, we have Mr. Chuck Canterbury from the National FOP. He's the president of National FOP, and we're going to talk about some related issues for 2011. We'll be back in just a few seconds with President Canterbury.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these. Girlfriend It is on TogiNet. Thursdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Central, with your hosts Patty Wyatt and Lisa Jernigan. This show is your chance to share, learn, laugh, and connect with other women. The Girlfriended Principle was born out of loss.
Lisa had recently had her mother pass away from cancer, and my mom was murdered. A man just walking into a room and started a 23-second shooting spree.
I think one of the things we both realized going through those tragedies that you can be extremely okay and be extremely sad.
Check out Girlfriended.com. And then be a part of Girlfriend It, the radio show, Thursdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Central.
You know, your boyfriend or your husband or whatever, they don't totally understand that emotional side to a woman like another woman does. And I think that's so important, just to have somebody that you go, she gets me.
Check out the website, girlfriendit.com. Don't miss Girlfriend It with Patty Wyatt and Lisa Jernigan, Thursdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Central on toginet.com.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. Join thousands of other law enforcement professionals attending Police Week, May 12th through the 17th, 2012, in Washington, D.C. The new Officer World Expo at Police Week will offer training, conference sessions, and networking opportunities to better equip those who protect others. Visit OfficerWorldExpo.com, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by editor-in-chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Good afternoon, folks. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us. Remember, as you listen to the show, you can call in if you like. The 800 number is 866-404-6519, or you can send me an email, frankborelli@officer.com. Joining us on the show now is Mr. Chuck Canterbury, the national president of the Fraternal Order of Police, and I hope where he is, it's a little bit warmer than where I am in Maryland. I take that back. We're in the low 40s now. Good afternoon, sir. How are you doing today?
Good. We're in the mid-50s, so got to be.
I'm going to be envious of you. We're supposed to be in the 60s on a weekend in time for me to cut more wood for when it gets cold again. Thank you for joining us this afternoon. I don't know if you heard our first segment with Sergeant Smith. We've been talking about 2011 and the number of officers that fell and whether it's going to get better or worse. you know, 173 officers was what I was told is the final numbers that fell in 2011. Far too many, 20 more than what fell in 2010. What's going on with the national FOP, the conversations about the number of people being ambushed, the general violence towards police officers?
Well, you know, obviously we're concerned. We've been in touch with the Attorney General of the United States as well as other groups to discuss the onslaught. The huge increase in firearms deaths is very concerning. But Frank, we're involved in an international group that'll be meeting in Baltimore in March, and one of our agenda items is stopping the violence against police worldwide. Just this past year, seven officers shot in New Zealand, two killed. And as you know, officers in New Zealand are not armed. So right. They've had a huge increase in violence in the South Pacific. So we're very concerned on it on a national level. Our European brothers at Eurocops, a consortium of police unions around Europe, have been meeting on the violence. And we'll be meeting with them in March and hopefully putting out some information from around the world.
Love to get you back on the show after that's occurred with anything that you can share, if you tuck that away for future use. Now, that's internationally. Are you seeing any kind of reaction from our local, state, federal elected representatives?
The only thing that we've seen, the Department of Justice has got a new safety initiative that they cranked up in the last 18 months with some online officer training. And obviously everybody's talking about the tragedy of officers. But as you're well aware, nationwide we're down about 45,000, maybe even 50,000 officers in the last 18 months. And no end in sight. Layoffs seem to be still going on across the country. Those that are coming back are merely to fill vacancies due to people that are walking away from the profession or retiring.
Right.
And the only thing legislative we've seen is legislatures around the country blaming public employees for the pension problems in the country. And here in South Carolina, my own governor recently said, you know, that the taxpayer shouldn't be forced to pay for police officer pension. Last time I looked, that's who we work for. They're our employers.
I'd love to hear the governor suggest another source of revenue for your retirement. I don't think that they want to suggest police officers spend 20, 25, 30 years in a career without a retirement, because I think we'd see our staffing levels get hurt even more.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the more they affect the pensions, the more people, especially, Frank, the highly educated people that are coming into law enforcement in the last 20 years with the increased requirements, the necessity to be computer literate. You know, many of our officers now are walking into the job with bachelor's degrees, master's degrees. They're mm-hmm. just going to look for outside employment. The only reason we took public employment wasn't for the pay, but it was for a combination of the pay, the fact that we do want to protect the public, and the benefits. The benefit packages were, in modern times, fairly generous, but based on the salary we make, they're justifiable.
Well, you know, and in all honesty, I became a police officer. I mean, I grew up on Andy Griffith. My dad was a lawyer, became a judge. Quite honestly, he didn't want me to become a police officer. And the guys who know him, the police officers who knew my father, would tell you he was very pro-police. He loved cops. He didn't want me to become one. I became a police officer because I had a legitimate desire to serve my community. But the reality is, if you're going to get married, you're going to have kids. You've got to make enough money to support your family. And you don't want to have to – I mean – we have a reasonable expectation of the limit of our career. You hit 50, 55, there comes a point where you can't do the job anymore. As unfortunate that is, and none of us really like to hear it, there comes a point where we're too old to do the work and meet the demands of it. Well, let me ask you this then. Has the FOP made any recommendations for agencies with regards to this increased violence and how to deal with it, policy changes, anything? I mean, is there any way we can improve our situation without a budget influx?
That's part of the dichotomy of what's going on. As you know, Frank, and you already said it in an earlier segment, the first thing that gets cut in economic times is the training budget. You know, I spent 7 years in training in my agency, and anytime we had money problems, they came to me looking for where we could cut. And I think that's happening now. Chiefs are being forced to look for money to cut in order to keep officers on the street, and training is the first place they come. equipment is the second place. And then, the third thing is just they have to go back and start laying off officers. I just talked to a sheriff's office in Ohio, 30 miles outside of Columbus, the largest city in Ohio. They're now going to have one deputy on the road at night, one. Last year, this time, they had four.
So what's that one officer do for backup?
The officer I talked to is a female officer, and she's hoping to continue to work with the cities in her county and the Ohio State Police. But the bottom line is it's going to change and should change their mode of response. Quick response is always vital in our job, but officers that are responding alone are going to have to slow down. Wait for backup. I mean, you just cannot go into certain situations alone. And it's what we've said all along in the last 2 years. This is a public safety issue. This isn't an officer safety issue specifically. This is across the board public safety. Fewer police mean slower responses. Slower responses mean more people hurt.
Unfortunately, though, so many members of the public aren't going to look at that as the responsibility of the community leaders. They're going to look at that as selfish police officers who don't care enough to show up and tell you that they're not willing to take the risk or whatever. Is there a way, an outreach program or something we can do to help the public understand what's going on?
Well, the best example I can have of that is recently with the vote in the Ohio legislature to do away with collective bargaining in the state of Ohio for public employees. We went to a public referendum and 65% of the public, or in polls, 65% supported law enforcement. And at the actual day of the election, they won almost 59% restoring those collective bargaining rights. And it was based on the fact that it was the unions that maintained staffing levels. It was the unions that forced the departments to provide training. And the public bought that, understood that, and they supported them. So I'm not sure that the public doesn't realize that they're responsible for public safety. And I think they're starting to tell politicians that police officers, law enforcement people in the country, corrections, EMS firefighters are more important than ballparks. And I think you're going to see a huge movement around the country. And everywhere that we've talked about it, and we talk about politicians having their first basic responsibility is public safety, we've not found many community groups that disagree with us on that.
Okay. Well, let me ask you something. You talk about movement. Does the FOP, do you as an individual, I don't care how you answer the question, we got about 4 minutes left in the show. This Occupy Wall Street thing is causing law enforcement a huge headache nationwide. There are obviously big officer survival issues concerned here. The example is that New Year's Eve officer who got stabbed and slapped with a pair of scissors by an occupier, and then the rest of the occupiers blocked the ambulance from coming to help the officer. What do we do about this? How do we deal with it without vilifying ourselves?
Well, the first and answer that you're really not going to like from me is the fact that, it is our job to protect the occupiers as well as the citizens from the occupiers.
I'm okay with that, Chuck. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, but legislators,
the occupiers become violent, it's a different story.
Well, exactly. And we have seen an uptick of crime in some cities around the Occupy movement because they have been havens for criminal activity. And in the cities where the police departments have specialized units that work with these type of things, they're actually been able to get into the Occupy movement leadership in these communities, as I now call them. And they've been helpful in making sure that crime and criminal element that's using the front of the occupiers, they've worked with us pretty well. But the bottom line is, we have to be vigilant. We have to maintain proper staffing levels, and we can't just leave one or two officers to watch these huge mass protests just because of the incident like we had in New York. And it's going to take the police associations forcing the departments to make sure that we have proper staffing at those issues.
Again, going back to the officer survival concerns caused by staffing. All right. What's National FOP got going on in 2012? Anything coming up?
We're really pushing the financial responsibility of Congress to support the COPS program. We put a number of officers on the street. What we're finding, and last year we fought to get the money sent to cities and counties without matching funds, but now the cities and counties are going, look, we don't know what it's going to be like in 4 years. We can't guarantee we'll retain them. So we're working with Congress and trying to get that money reinstated. The last appropriations bill, we lost almost every dime of money that was involved in the COPS program and the Burn JAG grant programs, which are vital to gang task force and joint terrorism task forces. So we'll be working. We have our Day on the Hill program comes in February, where we're going to come in mass into D.C. and push for more money from Congress for local law enforcement and to do away with the restrictions and the commitment levels that they have to keep. And let's get some more people on the street now. And retain officers, Frank. You know, we got a lot of laid off officers that can come back to work.
And are hungry to. Definitely need to. All right. We're down to a minute or less, Chuck. We just had 40,000 new laws went into effect across the nation, most of them at the state level. Real quick, any of them on the particular radar for the FOP?
This past session, the most important have been is pension reforms and collective bargaining reforms. And obviously those are things that we've opposed and worked with our legislators on. As far as safety issues, we've been working on a national level with the National Blue Alert Bill. Senator Cardin in Maryland introduced it for us. We've been trying to push that forward. You know, we believe that the faster we get the information out when there is a cop injured or we're killed in the line of duty, the faster we can catch the offender.
Perpetrator.
Absolutely. You know, the statistics this year, and I know Craig's going to talk about it following
Chuck,
me.
But I got to cut you off because they're going to cut me off with this break. We'll get you back a show in the near future. We'll discuss that more, that blue alert law. Is that okay?
Sure, Frank. Thanks.
Talk to you soon. Thanks for your time, sir. And we're going to go to break, folks. We'll be back with Mr. Craig Floyd right after this break and possibly a call-in. Holy cow. Talk to you in just a few seconds.
Want to get your voice heard about law enforcement issues? This is your show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com. And we'll be back with more right after these.
This is Frank Borelli, editor for Officer.com. 152. The number of law enforcement fatalities in 2010. The numbers are too high. Any line of duty death is unacceptable. Join us in Washington, D.C. next year during National Police Week at the first ever Officer World Expo as we combine a unique training opportunity with the largest police memorial in the United States. Visit OfficerWorldExpo.com for details and to join the mailing list. Officer World Expo, because some records aren't meant to be broken.
Connect with Juliana and connect with what lies beneath. Friday afternoons at 4 or 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Juliana is a marriage, family, and child therapist who wants people to connect. Connect with what lies beneath, those truths and answers. And through her counseling practice, she has helped others find their personal power and fulfill their dreams. And she wants to do the same for you here on Connect with Juliana. Through intimate discussions, intriguing subject matters, and the expertise of her guests. For more on the show and Juliana, check out her webpage. Connect with Juliana in media.com. Juliana will cover it all. Nothing is off limits. She wants to know what matters to you. Make the connection. Tune into TogiNet to connect with Juliana to find out the facts that could be hidden beneath the surface. Connect with Juliana on TogiNet to make a quality connection in your life. Friday afternoons at 4, 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of Officer.com and hosted by Editor-in-Chief of Officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Now, let's get back to the show. It's Officer Radio on Officer.com.
Good afternoon, folks. Welcome back to the last segment of the show. In the history of the show, which is going on 4 months and change now, I've had one call in. Now we have our second one from a gentleman named, I'm just going to call him Mr. Vincent. I don't know if he wants his whole name out there. Mr. Vincent, how are you this afternoon, sir?
Good afternoon. Hi. Well, the second caller in, that's quite an honor.
Well, I don't know if you want to call it an honor. I guess that's how this see how this conversation goes, and then you can decide that. What's your comment on today's topic, sir?
Well, I love your website, and it is extremely saddening to, like you say, wake up every day, every other day, and see another officer being killed, and extremely saddening to see what's going on in Iraq, Afghanistan, the suicide bombers, the hundreds of thousands of orphans over there now. And so the good news, what I told you about, is there is a new medicine out. We saw what happened to the park ranger in Washington State a few days ago. A disgruntled vet shot her in the face.
Okay. And you have but before you go on, you have information about a medicine that is related to the attacks on the police officers, hopefully by treating people so they're less violent?
Totally. Totally.
Okay. Pentagon, you've got – I hate to say this, but we're on a time limit, so give me the Reader's Digest condensed version so the listeners can get the info.
Okay. Well, I'm calling from Colorado. The medicine, we call it Avatar. It's based on a neurotransmitter, a tryptamine neurotransmitter called dimethyltryptamine. Your serotonin is a 5-hydroxytryptamine. Okay, it's a cousin of that. And so we've got it in a form that is just – it is the medicine that you've been waiting for that will actually cure PTSD, prevent officer suicides. I've been talking with
okay, Mr. Vincent, stop right there, and I apologize for having to cut you off.
Sure.
That's some of the best news that I've ever heard. It sounds like it needs to be a topic of its own radio show, and I need to get more information from you about it so I can ask you the important questions that our readers, our listeners want to have during that show. At the moment, though, I've got Mr. Craig Floyd on, had him scheduled. I need to switch over to him. Can you send me some more information? I would greatly appreciate it. And I did get your other emails.
We'll be doing a WebEx teleconference, and I encourage officers and law enforcement community from all over the country to tune in. This is the best news.
Okay. Well, excellent. Send me the information on it, and we will get that to you, okay?
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, sir. Enjoy your afternoon. Now, folks, we're going to switch over to Mr. Craig Floyd from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. I appreciate his patience. How are you doing this afternoon, Craig?
Doing very good, Frank. Thank you.
Thank you for your patience, sir. It's a rare occasion I call you by your first name. I apologize. Normally I call you Mr. Floyd, and I don't mean to minimize the level of respect that I have for you and the memorial and everything that you do, especially looking back at a year like 2011. What was the final number of officers lost, 173?
Well, we announced 173 fatalities on December 28th. That was the number. Unfortunately, over the next 3 days, we lost 4 more officers nationwide. 3 of them were shot and killed. So that actually put the number at 177 at the end of the year. 71 of those officers were shot and killed. That's a 20% increase over the previous year. And if you go back to 2009, we were all getting excited. The numbers had dropped dramatically for 2 years straight.
Right.
We saw 122 officers die in 2009. If you compare that number to this year's number, 177, that's a 42% increase in the number of officers killed in the line of duty over just the last 2 years. And in the last 7 days, Frank, if you can believe this, we've lost 7 officers in the line of duty. 6 of them were shot and killed. I've never seen anything like it. It's got to get everybody's attention. We were already talking about this very serious problem, and now all kinds of bells and whistles are going off. We've got to get our head around this problem before more officers die.
Absolutely. You know, I commented on this earlier in the show. I mean, look at the incident where 6 officers get shot by, you know, serving a drug warrant, and one of them dies. The park ranger that was killed, this is ridiculous. And have you seen, is the ratio, is the cause of the officer deaths staying about the same in percentages as far as firearms, traffic accidents, stuff like that? Or has the number of firearms causes really increased
as well? Firearms-related deaths. Firearms-related deaths, as I mentioned, went up 20% last year and then 20% the year before. So that's a dramatic increase. When you look at traffic-related incidents, that number in 2011 actually dropped 10%. That's some good news, really the only good news in our end-of-the-year report. So that's been an area of great focus. I know you've been talking about it. We've been talking about it. We've been working with NHTSA, National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, IACP, NSA, all of these groups are working in partnership with us to try to reduce traffic-related fatalities. And thankfully, last year's figure, 64 officers killed in traffic-related deaths, that was the second lowest figure we've seen in the last 15 years. So that was one piece of good news. Firearms way up, though, and that's very troubling.
You know, earlier I was talking to Sergeant Betsy Brantner-Smith about ambushes and how many officers are being killed in an ambush. I remember clearly January of last year, the Lakewood incident, four officers shot, and that horrible weekend where we lost so many. Do you think that's going to get worse this year, Craig?
Well, we've certainly seen a major increase this year in ambush, surprise attacks against law enforcement officers. A couple of them, as blatant as could be, they're sitting at a traffic light. A criminal drives up next to them, never had any interaction with that officer before, and they pull out a weapon and assassinate that officer sitting behind the wheel of their car. We've seen too many of these instances this year to think that it's just an aberration. What we're seeing, and a lot of people are pointing to, is a more desperate criminal. When you serve an arrest warrant these days, you've got to be prepared to get in a shootout. Too many of these criminals seemingly don't want to go back to jail or prison. They're willing to take their chances shooting it out with law enforcement professionals. That's part of the problem. Another part of the problem is a more cold-blooded, brazen criminal element on the streets of America who don't think twice about shooting a police officer. They have no respect for human life. Frankly, I don't think they care a whole lot about their own lives. They don't have a lot to lose, I guess, in their own mind, so they'd rather just shoot a police officer and take their chances. A lot of them then commit suicide soon after. So these are all trouble spots for law enforcement. And, you know, I think one thing you got to look at, Frank, and we have done this recently, you look at the record of the cop killers over the last 10 years, you find that 82% of those cop killers had a prior criminal arrest. Most of them were violent criminals, and 26 of them were actually murderers. All right, they had been arrested for murder. Somehow they'd been let out of jail or the prison system, and then they were able to kill that police officer. One in four of those cop killers over the last 10 years had a prior history of assaulting a police officer. This is not the first time that they were committing a crime of violence when they killed that officer. Most of them had a long criminal history, and these are people that should have been behind bars. In fact, 164 of the cop killers in the last 10 years were out on parole or probation at the time that they murdered that police officer. So they were actually in prison for some other crime. They were released and had the ability then to kill that police officer who tried to make an arrest.
I hate to say it. I'm going to make the statement, then I'm going to switch gears on you. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. Until we see budgets improving, where training can be increased and manpower can be increased, and more importantly, jails aren't having to release criminals at half their sentence time because they don't have the money to keep them behind bars, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better, and I hope I'm wrong. But like I said, now I'm going to switch gears on you. Having thrown that out, I'm not going to give you any moment to dispute it. I'm going to switch gears on you. What's going on in 2012 for the memorial, the museum, the gift shop, any fundraising activities, everything? Talk to me about 2012 for NLEOMF.
Well, we just come off a very good year in many ways. Obviously, law enforcement safety was not part of the good news. There was some good news, though, with our National Law Enforcement Museum that's been in the works now for the past decade, really. We did commence construction this past year. We completed the first phase, utility relocation work, that went on for about 11 months. That was completed on budget and on schedule. And then the next phase now is to begin the core and shell work later this year. We also came off our best fundraising year ever in 2011. We actually received more than $14 million in new cash and pledges for the National Law Enforcement Museum, our best year ever and our best year as an organization. A lot of corporate support and a lot of law enforcement support coming in as we see us getting closer to opening that National Law Enforcement Museum. Obviously, coming up during National Police Week in May, We, on May 13th, will be adding the names of the officers who died in 2011 and probably about another 150 or so others who died earlier in history, but we've just identified them through our own research efforts this past year.
I was going to ask how many. That's always a curious thing to me. Continue on.
No, more than if you total that with the 170-plus that died in 2011, you're looking at more than 300 new names going on the memorial this year. This past year we went over the 19,000 mark in terms of officers killed in the line of duty whose names are inscribed on the marble walls, and so that'll push it even closer to 20,000. And, we'll have a wonderful ceremony, as we always do, to pay tribute to these men and women who've sacrificed their lives for our safety and our protection, and it's a time of the year, as it is right now, where we're thinking a lot about the men and women in law enforcement, the risks they take on our behalf, and the sacrifices that are being made for our public safety.
Well, officer.com will be live streaming the Candlelight Vigil again this year quite proudly, and we're glad to do that. What else? We're down to about a minute left in the show. What else is going on in 2012 that you want to call attention to quickly?
Well, in later this month, January 26th, in fact, we're hosting a law enforcement safety summit, if you will. It's called the Officer Safety and Wellness Group, which we're a part of. We'll be hosting it at our facilities here in Washington. The Attorney General and other leading DOJ officials, as well as law enforcement leaders from across the country, participate in this event. And we're going to try to get our head around this serious problem of violence against law enforcement officers and a spike in law enforcement fatalities. So that's coming up later this month. Hopefully we'll come out of there with some answers and see the numbers diminish this year. I certainly hope that's the case. That's what we all pray for.
I hope so, too. I look forward to getting the information out of that if it's available. Thank you very much for joining us today, sir. I believe, and I will check with the folks in your office, that you'll be back to join us the last Thursday of this month. Thank you for joining us today and all the information that you've had available for us. To my listeners, thank you very much for listening to the show today. This will be archived podcast and on our radio page. Lots of good information here. Come back next week for more. Thank you for listening to Officer Radio on officer.com. Stay safe on the streets.
Thank you for being a part of Officer Radio, powered by the worldwide resources of officer.com and hosted by editor-in-chief of officer.com, 30-year law enforcement veteran Frank Borelli. Each week, Officer Radio